Advaitic Sadhana by S.S. Cohen. Chapter 4. Pitfalls. While on the subject of meditation, it will be worth our while to draw the attention of the sadhaka to the variety of sensory experiences which some beginners obtain or imagine they obtain in meditation. The case of the gentleman who had heard an explosion inside his skull and had run out of the meditation room all a tremble is exceptional, no doubt, but by no means unique. The number of visions is certainly legion, but less in the ordinary state of consciousness than in meditation. Supersensuous hearing and seeing are frequent to those who expect them and even prefer them, mistaking them for signs of divine grace. In this sadhana, they are condemned. They harass only beginners or the mentally immature who entertain wrong, fantastic notions of the yogic practice. The world we have seen is but the shadow play of the senses, to suppress which we take to sadhana, so that falling victim to the senses in the very attempt at destroying them is admitting Maya by the back door. Yogis must be warned against these fraudulent experiences. Whatever is seen, heard, or smelt in meditation is pure fancy and therefore must be mercilessly ignored. It will eventually give way before a determined practice. A very large section of humanity equates miracles and visions with holiness, and the common folk in this country, India, likewise view them with undisguised awe, so that millions flock to him who can exhibit a pennyworth miracle. Vedantic India abhors them and has a profound contempt for the conspicuous display of Siddhis, psychic powers, except by the Jnani Siddhas on special but very infrequent occasions, for it detracts from the realization of the truth, which is the sole aim of this yoga. These Siddhas must be distinguished from the so-called occultists who claim to have Siddhis but have no Jnana, knowledge of the reality, nor specifically aim at achieving it. Those who claim and work for miracles and Siddhis by whatever name they are known have no place in the path of the Absolute. The seekers of the Absolute have to guard against these lures and traps of the senses and against the fables that circulate about the dangers of yoga. Dhyana yoga must be purified from these excrescences, and being safe and simple, it can be practiced by anyone at any time and in any healthy and clean environment and circumstance without the slightest fear or hesitation. Chapter 5. Samadhi. The word Samadhi has often been translated as trance in English, which is highly misleading. Trance has a bad odor and can by no means convey the idea of Sinmatra, the pure consciousness which is vividly experienced in the heart in Samadhi. Advaitic Samadhi has no resemblance whatever to the cataleptic trance which the mysteries of ancient Egypt and Greece were said to induce, or to the contemplation of the religious mystic. Hence, I have left Samadhi untranslated throughout this essay. The terms Nirvana and mind, not Manas, used by Zen Buddhists and Mahayanists seem to have the same connotation as Samadhi. Samadhi is therefore the experience of the pure, formless consciousness in the heart, which once experienced is never lost. The seeking will then end, and the consolidation of the experience into the permanency of Sahaja Samadhi alone remains to be achieved. With rare exceptions, the early experience of Samadhi is vague and shaky, but it acquires firmness by practice, which is no longer the same as the pre-samadhi practice, which has been one of searching for the heart. Henceforth, meditation is effortless to a degree and free from the strain and doubts of the past. If the samadhi continues to be disturbed by thoughts, it is called savikalpa, in which, though peaceful, the world as thoughts is still feebly present. It has not yet become firm enough to free itself from thinking, which is the characteristic of the next higher samadhi, the nirvikalpa, wherein the mind stands poised in the stillness of the heart. This is the swarupa, the very nature of existence and of all things, the being or self-absolute. When by constant practice nirvikalpa samadhi is turned into sagaja, self-realization or jivan mukti, the state of liberation in life is said to have been achieved. The jivan mukta is permanently aware of his reality as consciousness bliss. I have given these details in the hope of dispelling some of the myths which have been woven by imaginative writers around nirvikalpa and around samadhi. The mysteries which are said to shroud them do not exist at all. Samadhi is the state of one's own true self, in which all human endeavors find fulfillment. Love for power, wealth, fame, country, service of humanity, or religious worship has samadhi or self-discovery alone for its objective. For him who has achieved it, there remains nothing more to do or aspire for in life. He has realized his own truth as the all, the soul of all, dwelling ever and ever in the hearts of all. And because his state is beyond common experience, it has been subject to so much speculation and unintelligent guesswork. Hence is the need for the above details. Chapter 6. The Sattvic Food. In every country in this wide world, there are a good number of people who lead a virtuous life and attempt to tread the path of true religion and piety, each according to his light. Of these, not a few aspire to follow the Vedantic tradition and are eager to know the kind of diet they should adopt for this purpose. Their eagerness is quite understandable, considering the distinct effects of food and drink on our physical and moral well-being, effects which can be by no means minimized. Who has not been a witness to the injuries of strong liquor to oneself and one's near and dear, or to the suffering caused by certain articles of diet to a constitution which is not suited to them? And when the body is struck down by a disease or becomes upset, the mind, which is our most precious asset, goes down the same slope. This is what caused the ancients to prescribe a regimen for the yogi and to warn him against indiscriminate feeding. To perform sadhana, a sound health is of paramount importance. We cannot be too careful to avoid anything which is likely to disturb the balance of our physical economy. The quantity of food we ingest is not of less importance than its quality. And no food can be expected to yield the desired nourishment, but the simplest, which is easily digestible, prevents accumulation, fermentation, and general discomfort. This food we call sattvic, harmonious, compatible, agreeable, and is of much help to the sadhana. No hard and fast rule can be made for the articles which should be used in the diet. Constitutions differ, so do climatic conditions. What is good for one person and in one part of the world may not be good for another and in another part of the world. The question of availability must also be considered. Yet, so much can be said about the diet in general, namely, that animal food is discouraged in this path, especially if the animal concerned is developed in bulk or low and loathsome in habits. One need hardly specify. He who has chosen this spiritual line will not fail to distinguish between the clean and the unclean, and between what is good for him to eat and what is not. In India, the food served in ashrams and temples, as well as in most Brahmin houses, consists of some of the following: rice, wheat, pulses, milk, butter, ghee, fresh vegetables, nuts, etc., cooked in simple style, in addition to fruits and moderate quantities of tea and coffee. There are also very large non-Brahmin communities all over the country which consider it a sacrilege to feed on flesh, so that a very high percentage of the Hindu population is pure vegetarian and, notwithstanding, keeps a robust health and sturdy constitution. As for drink, nothing can be healthier than pure fresh water. Intoxicants are strictly prohibited, for they fuddle and muddy up the mind, which with the extreme care we are preparing for the supreme experience. It is only when the body is healthy and in perfect ease, and the mind clear, happy and alert, that this yoga can succeed. Yoga killeth all pain for him who is regulated in eating and leisure, regulated in working, regulated in sleeping and waking. When his subdued mind is fixed in the self, free from longing for desirable objects, then he is said to be harmonized. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verses 17-18, from S.S. Cohen's 1975 publication entitled Advaitic Sadhana, to be continued.